You're listening to Steel Talking here on WCCO Radio. I'm Moose Miller sitting in tonight for Geralyn Steele. Tim Johnson joins us from the University of Minnesota out of the Poli Sci Department. He specializes in the Supreme Court, and with the arguments that have just been laid out in front of Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice, and other justices with regard to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare or whatever you want to call it, it's interesting to look at King versus Burwell, this case that's before the court, and how the various justices will ask questions and what that might lead towards. And I'm kind of curious, Tim, just your initial takeaway thoughts after that day of questioning.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Moose. I appreciate the time tonight and glad to be here. It was actually quite an interesting oral argument for a number of reasons. The two most important reasons actually come down to the two justices who will probably be the deciding votes in this case. The first was Chief Justice Roberts. And as you may remember, Chief Justice Roberts was the swing vote or the deciding vote in the first ACA cases that upheld the law when everyone thought it would probably be struck down a couple of years ago, and he wrote the opinion in the case. In this oral argument last week, he barely said a word, meaning he really held his cards close to the his chest. And that actually might may very well be telling, and probably gives the Obama administration some hope, because he really didn't use the time to go after the administration or to really try to poke holes in its case. And that is some indication, if you will, that maybe he is going to stick with the position he had in the first case. The more interesting is actually Justice Kennedy, who was not the swing vote the first time around, and in fact a lot of commentators thought that he would be. But the questioning that Justice Kennedy did really seemed to indicate that he was troubled by the arguments that were being presented by the plaintiffs, those who want to see the law struck down. And so it could very well be that this case, while, again, controversial, comes down to a 6-3 decision. It's actually possible that this time the administration not only wins the chief's vote, but may also win Justice Kennedy's vote as well.
Yeah, I thought I read the other day where Chief Justice Roberts, the one question that he did ask seemed to indicate that maybe he was finding a way to throw this back into, you know, a political vote, or that a president could be the one that would shift or make that change. So if you got a Republican president, then you could do it by the will or the vote of the people, so to speak, rather than the court.
That's absolutely right. And I mean, if you go all the way back to John Roberts, to the chief's confirmation hearings, he very much wanted the court to be a conservative court. Now, let me be clear on this. When he said that, he wasn't actually saying he wanted the court to be ideologically conservative, although we all know that as a Republican appointee, he probably is ideologically conservative. What he meant was that he thinks the court should stay silent on most issues about which he believes, as you just said, our elected officials should be the ones to make the decisions. And so you're absolutely right. His question indicated, why not just leave the law as it is? And in fact, if a Republican takes the White House in 2016 and the Republicans hold both the Senate and the House, they could simply go ahead and repeal the law. On the other hand, the risk he takes with that position is if the Democrats take over the Senate or retake the Senate and retain the White House, then the law will stay in effect. But either way, you're right. The chief really wants this to be in the hands of the political branches, not the legal branch.
Well, one of the terms that we heard thrown around there was the Chevron deference.
Yes.
What in layman's term, what is that, this doctrine of law that they talked about or cited as an example, and then what Roberts kind of said about it relative to the Affordable Care Act? Put it into terms that a simple Moose Miller can understand.
Yeah, and you know what? I actually feel very similar to you, Moose. I mean, even though I'm a professor at the U, there are times when things get incredibly complicated. And the deference that comes out of the Chevron doctrine is that when you are looking at whether or not Congress meant something in particular in a law that they wrote that you should defer to what the elected officials who wrote the law, in this case members of Congress, had to say about that law. And in this case, no one who had anything to do with the law was interpreting that law in the way that the plaintiffs are trying to interpret it in this case. And so that reference to Chevron sort of indicates that we will just go back and defer to those elected branches.
And wasn't there even some Republicans that were part of that crafting?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. There was bipartisan support on a decent amount of ACA. Now, not all of it. And when it went through the House, it was, you know, pretty close to a party-line vote. But there absolutely was some bipartisan support on some aspects of it.
You know, and this really, to me, so fits how Justice Roberts likes to operate and you know, kick this back to, you know, the people, the politicians, the elected representatives.
Oh, absolutely. And it is absolutely consistent with his wanting the courts to be as out of the political process as humanly possible. That is, if you can allow the elected officials, because they're democratically elected by the people, to make the decision, then the court should stay hands off. And in that sense, that is, as I was talking a couple minutes ago about, this really, really conservative view of the judiciary. And that is, the judiciary should, when at all possible, defer to the elected branches, even if they might not like the policy the elected branches are making. You still defer to them because they are the ones who have been democratically elected.
All right. Now, what about people that have been talking about Justice Alito and whether or not his questioning and comments may have taken a different tact or approach to Obamacare?
I think that his questions were pretty consistent with the ones that he had in the initial case, and that is that he really does believe in some sense this idea that Justice Scalia is actually more prone to be vocal about, and that is you look at the plain meaning of the words of a particular statute in this case. And so if the statute says either you have a state that you've got to have a state like Minnesota that creates these exchanges, or else there can't be funding for health care, then you just read those words and you don't try to get into the minds of a legislator, a member of Congress, either a representative or a senator. And that's sort of where he was pointing in this case as well.
You know, and the other thing that comes in to be a factor here is, okay, when this decision comes down, also affects the timeline of the future pricing of, you know, insurance plans and things like that. How do you set this exchange up when there's uncertainty?
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. And one of the things that I don't think many people realize, just because the court is so shrouded in secrecy, is that while the justices are making decisions based on the law, right, they're trying to make a clear understanding of how to interpret, in this case, this particular law, they are very cognizant of the policy consequences. And so not only are they cognizant of what it's going to take to set the prices for exchanges throughout the country, they're cognizant of the argument that the administration made that if you say that the ACA now only applies to the 14 states that had exchanges set up, the 6 million other people in the other 36 states that have gotten healthcare through healthcare.gov, they suddenly lose it. And that's a real policy problem for the nation.
Well, I'll give you an example.
Healthcare system.
To our south, Iowa is a real good example. You know, here in Minnesota, we've got a robust marketplace and a lot more healthy people that buy premiums and pay into the system and may never use healthcare, which helps the system work. But to our south in Iowa, that population and demographic is a lot different. It's older, it's sicker, it's fatter and more diabetic, whatever you want to call it, that these exchanges, some of them are just getting clobbered because they can't bring in enough people that pay premium that don't use it.
That's absolutely right, and that actually is one of the advantages of having the national or the federal government have these national exchanges,
right?
Because the whole concept is you have, as you just alluded to, you have healthy people who pay into them, and that drives premiums down because they're not using the healthcare system, and that's really what they need policy-wise.
Right, and it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. What do you anticipate will be the date that we hear a decision on this? Is the court going to drag it out to the end of July like we did the last time?
You know, the end of June, and I think that both this case as well as the gay marriage case that will be argued next month, they will be handed down probably the last 2 days of the term, or both of them will be handed down on the same day. And so that will be probably the last Thursday in June. And I don't know that exact date, but that last week in June is when you can anticipate this decision.
You brought up same-sex marriage. I want to get to that real quick
sure.
here, but I got to take a break. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on you know, where you see arguments heading on that, because there's already been a couple of justices that have kind of tipped their hand on this thing.
Yeah.
And how this has kind of played itself out has been an interesting journey in and of itself. It's Moose Miller in tonight for Geralyn Steele here on Steele Talking on WCCO Radio. Still to come between 9 and 10, center stage. Got a lot of great entertainment coming up in there. Actors, we've got movies, we've got stand-up comedian. It's going to be a great center stage show that Geralyn and producer Jimmy Erickson have put together that I'm looking forward to just kicking back and sitting back and enjoying. So hopefully you'll hang around here with us on WCCO. But we'll come back with more from our guest here from the University of Minnesota, Tim Johnson, as we focus in on the Supreme Court. That's his specialty here on WCCO Radio.